Dr. Benner from the Shelbourne East Center, and you're here with us on the Shelbourne East Center podcast. My co-host Scott Bauman is here with me as always, and tonight we're here with another episode to discuss some knee topics. Please look up last week's episode where we talked about factors that dictate total knee arthroplasty polyethylene size. That was an interesting study that Scott and I did a lot of work on, along with Brittany Sloat, who's a medical student that we worked with as well, to try to figure out what factors there are that lead to a larger or smaller polyethylene insert and whether that has any impact on the outcomes from our total knee replacement. So that was a good episode. Check that one out from a week ago. As always, you can find us on social media at our Facebook and YouTube channels for the Shelbourne Knee Center podcast. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at the handle at the SKC podcast. If you'd like to contact us, you can email the SKC podcast at gmail.com. Make sure to hit that follow button so you don't miss any of our content. And if you like what you hear, please leave us a 5-star review and any comments for any that come behind you. Tonight, we're going to be talking about an interesting topic that I think a lot of orthopedic surgeons see, not just knee specialists, but not just sports medicine specialists, but even general orthopedic surgeons see, people see when they cover the emergency department, the treatment of multi-ligament injuries with medial side injuries. So we're talking specifically about ACL, MCL injuries tonight and discussing our treatment plans with this. So we tend to look at this a little bit different compared to what may be out there. So hopefully this will be a good topic for us to discuss. So Scott, as always, thanks for joining me on the episode, and let's jump right into this topic. This topic is the subject of a poster and a presentation that we've done previously at a couple of national meetings. It'll be coming up this summer at the American Orthopedic Society for Sports Medicine, the AOSSM summer meeting, as a poster. And we wanted to just touch on this data a little bit. So, Scott, let's talk about what was the background for this study. What did we do previously, and what's kind of our rationale behind this study looking at the treatment of ACL, MCL injuries?
So the rationale for this study is very similar to the other studies that we've done. We get the rationale mainly from the literature out there on the topic, as well as the topic of discussion at these national meetings that we attend. And it boils down to the question of what to do with the MCL in an ACL-MCL injury. And this goes back, you know, in a more seminal study 15, 20 years ago at a group from, I believe, Italy it was, that looked at a cadaver study and showed that the laxity in an ACL-MCL injury is going to be higher than that of an isolated ACL, which begs the question, what do you do with the MCL again? So more clinical studies in the past have looked at this as well. And there's really a few different ways you can address the MCL in this multi-ligament injury. It can be treated non-operatively, mainly through bracing, which is something we don't do actually. We will use a rigid cast for this, but we'll touch on that more in the methods. But so you have the non-operative treatment for MCL tears. You can surgically reconstruct the MCL or you can repair the MCL. So there's been some studies that's looked at those few options. And there was one study recently in OJSM that looked at reconstruction versus repair. And it looked at laxity as well as revision rates and found that reconstruction was superior to repair in terms of postoperative laxity as well as revision rates. So the thought there is that the reconstruction is going to be a little bit better. However, in a different study, this one was looking at a more of a registry data of 20,000 patients. It found that the reconstructed patients of the MCL in the ACL-MCL injuries typically lead to worse subjective scores. You know, if you follow some of Dr. Shelbourne's work from the past, a lot of this has to do with postoperative stiffness. The MCL is pretty notorious for getting stiff, and especially in the reconstruction setting, this can be a complication, if you want to call it, with the reconstruction, lead to stiffness, and that lead to poor subjective scores. So then you have the non-surgical management, and again, from that same registry study that we looked at for this one, it looked at the non-surgical management of MCL tears, and it showed that it led to an increased revision rate compared to more of the surgical options. So you have reconstruction that is supposedly better than repairs when it comes to revision rates. Yeah, subjective scores are bad. And the non-operative management through bracing also shows to be higher revision rates. So the rationale for us to look at this was because, as you mentioned, we treat the MCL in a little bit different manner. When we see these acute ACL-MCL injuries, we put the patient in a cast to let the medial side heal. And then we'd like to target that as trying to get it to act like a isolated ACL reconstruction. So we set that study up to try to prove that the rigid casting approach to heal the MCL would hopefully lead to some positive outcomes.
It's interesting. I think this has changed over time, even since, you know, I started residency in 2006. And since then, even I feel like that's kind of gone. The pendulum's kind of swung widely on how to manage these injuries. I think over the last 20 years, started more on the lateral side, with lateral side knee dislocations or multi ligament injuries, more than the medial side, where there started to be a lot of anatomic studies. Dr. LaPrade being one of the ones that's the most involved in that, doing these kind of differential sectioning studies where they section different structures on the lateral side of the knee and see what effect it had on ligament stability. And then thinking then was, well, if each of these can differentially change the stability on the lateral side, then maybe we should be reconstructing them. You hear Dr. Shelbourne talk about that. He said, I used to take this big mass of tissue and I would divide it into four or five different structures and I would repair them all back, and it would end up looking just like the massive tissue that I started with from the very beginning. So we started to do an end mass repair on the lateral side, and that's how we still look at things pretty simplistically on how do we restore enough stability to the lateral side without over constraining it, without causing motion problems and other kinds of damage. Check out our previous episode with Mark Harrow to talk more about that if you're interested in that topic. But I think as a result of that, there became a big push to reconstruct lateral sides in lateral side multi-ligament injuries. And then I think as a byproduct of that, I think some of those same groups that were interested in that started to move over to the medial side and thought, well, let's do the same thing on the medial side. Let's look at some anatomic studies. Let's see what really drives stability on that side of the knee, and see if we can fine-tune the stability with reconstructions as opposed to repairs or immobilization to see if that could lead to better outcomes. From our perspective, I think this is a pretty simple problem, in that we want to restore stability to the medial side as best we can, and then try to treat this as much like an isolated ACL tear as possible. And the same is true of the lateral side, which leads to what we believe to be a pretty simplistic approach to on how to go about this. So, Scott, talk a little bit about the kind of early things that we see with these patients when they first come in, what kind of mechanisms of injuries they have, and what you find on physical exam, and how we do some of the decision making for these injuries.
Going to the mechanism part, I mean, your traditional, a lot of times these could be contact injuries. If you take a blow to the outside of the knee and have the knee go into a valgus moment, you're going to tear that MCL as well as the ACL. But these are seen some non-contact as well. But when the patient comes in, these patients are typically incredibly unstable, typically come in with crutches, limited weight bearing, a lot of pain on the medial side. And we kind of talk in the clinic that, you know, patient comes in with this big wobbly knee going side to side, and that's a pretty gross laxity on that medial side. So we get them on the table, pretty painful to touch on the medial side, definitely some valgus stress gapping on that medial side. When it comes to swelling on these, you may or may not see an effusion due to the potential disruption of the medial capsule, which if that happens, there's going to be some medial side bruising. So all depends on the presentation there. But the telltale sign and key with this one is going to be that gross laxity on the medial side.
Yeah, and for these patients in particular, it's laxity on the medial side in full extension. At 30 degrees in an isolated MCL tear, you may have that laxity just at 30 degrees. And when you extend the knee and tighten that posterior capsule along with going into full extension with intact cruciate ligaments, then usually the knee will be stable at zero. But for these patients that have combined ligament injuries, they're usually grossly unstable even at 0 degrees, which can be help us differentiate between an isolated MCL and an ACL MCL injury. And I think the interesting thing that you hit on there, Scott, is just how unstable these patients are. As opposed to isolated ACLs, while they can't extend their knee, they can at least put their foot on the ground. Usually they can weight bear in some way. ACL MCLs are almost afraid to put any weight on their knees at all. If they've so much as touched their toe to the ground, they feel like their whole knee is going to collapse into valgus. So I always think it's interesting when we have these patients, they come in wheelchairs, they come in giant bulky splints. And if you get them up off the table, try to walk them over to the table, they feel like they can't even put their foot on on the ground when they don't have their brace on. So, you know, once we find these, Scott, talk a little bit about our initial management with immobilization, which classically been the treatment for these patients. But we tend to use cast immobilization as opposed to splints. So why do we advocate for cast immobilization other than splinting or bracing?
Well, I'll look at that as twofold. One is to improve the mobility of the patient. And like you had mentioned, the patients come in with these ACL, MCL injuries. Most of the time, they're going to be on crutches. And like you said, they're very hesitant for full weight bearing. And giving them the added stability of a rigid cast versus just the brace is going to give them the ability and confidence to mobilize themselves and walk, not normal, obviously, because they have a cast on, but with more confidence and better ability. You know, Dr. Shelbourne started doing these years ago, and he was treating Purdue athletes, and he tells the story all the time when he was bracing these patients, and it was more difficult for the patients to get around and walk until he went to the cast. And you know, you do these in the clinic, and the patients basically walk out without crutches. You would think it'd be difficult to walk with this big bulky cast on, but through the immobilization, they're actually given more stability to walk a little bit more normal. And then the second reason is to keep them in that 30 degrees of fixed flexion to allow the MCL to heal. And traditionally, I think bracing is probably still the preferred choice of most physicians. And anybody that's put a brace on and try to lock out somebody in about 30 degrees of flexion, there is a lot of give inside the brace, and it's very difficult to find a brace that's going to fit snug enough and stay locked in that position to give the knee the adequate chance to heal in that 30 degrees of flexion that we're looking for. So for those two reasons, we cast these patients when we see them acutely.
Yeah, I think you really only get one shot at getting good stability on the medial side non-surgically. And really, I think the same thing on the lateral side, even though we do that surgically as opposed to non-surgically. Getting to these patients into the office quickly is an important point. And then also getting their definitive treatment that's most likely to achieve stability of whichever side you're dealing with quickly and efficiently is the way to go about it. I have a lot of patients that come in a brace and say, you know what, it's kind of hard for me to get around in this brace. Is there anything you can do better for me? I'm like, actually, yes, I would like to put you in a cast that goes all the way from here all the way down to here, showing them all the way along leg cylinder cast from hip to ankle. And the response I get is usually, well, okay, I changed my mind. Can I still use the brace? Well, you just told me a minute ago you weren't getting around very well in the brace. So I think the idea that we can achieve adequate stability with a brace that patients still have trouble walking around in, I think is just not the case. And secondly, once we get them in a position we like, we want to keep them there. We don't want them to be in and out of this brace several times throughout the day and give it the opportunity to continue to have that instability and not heal rigidly. So, you know, the take-home point is cast immobilization, get them in the position you want. Get the medial side kind of compressed together with almost a little bit of varus stress to compress that medial side together in about 30 degrees of flexion, and get them rigidly fixed with a cast that will keep them there. And a lot of these patients, like you said, will come in a wheelchair saying, I've barely been able to move over the last few days since I hurt my knee. And then they'll get up and walk out under their own power with putting full weight on it in a cast, which is then giving them absolute stability. I think another important point to highlight is the location of the MCL tear can make a difference in how stable they are on the medial side initially. So, proximal mid-substance and distal MCL tears are going to act differently. The proximal ones, they hurt a lot, and the patients get really, really stiff with those, but they aren't really that unstable. So sometimes with a proximal injury, if the patient's really stiff and they don't open up that much and they're tender over that medial epicondyle, sometimes I won't even immobilize them at all. Or if I do immobilize them for a very short time, versus the mid-substance ones are a little more unstable and take a little bit longer to heal. And the more distal ones take the longest to heal and can be really, really unstable as well. So that's another thing to keep in mind if you have an MRI scan to look at. And if you can tell, based on your physical exam or your imaging where the MCL rupture is, that does play into our management decisions as far as picking a mobilization for the more distal ones, especially, and a longer duration, the more distal the MCL tear is. So, you know, those are some points as well when we're thinking about initial evaluation. So, Scott, let's get back to our study. I guess we kind of got us off track there for a minute on physical exam and mechanism of injury and location of the tear and our cast immobilization technique. So let's get back to the study. How did we come up? You know, you talked already about some introductory information on how we got to this idea and the rationale for the study. Let's dig in now and talk about how we got that population and how we got this group together to put this to the test with our data.
Sure. So we pulled patients out of our database, which we've been collecting data since the early 80s. With the inclusion criteria, we wanted these patients to be patellar tendon graft, which is the only graft choice that we use in our office. And we wanted to have a minimum 1-year follow-up for these patients. Exclusion-wise, we excluded all revision cases, as well as lateral side or PCL involvement to take out that potential confounding variable there, as well as lacking postoperative KT data. Since that was one of our main outcomes, we wanted that to be an exclusion criteria if they did not have that post-op KT data after surgery. So based on that inclusion and exclusion criteria, we ended up with 6,047 total patients that had an ACL reconstruction in that time frame. 5,670 of them were isolated ACL reconstructions, and 377 patients had ACL, MCL injuries. And then from there, we wanted to one-to-one match these patients to try to limit any of these confounding variables. So if we one-to-one matched the isolated ACL reconstructed patients to the ACL, MCL patients based on sex, age, activity rating, and surgery timing. And that surgery timing is going to be your typical acute, subacute, or chronic patients there. So after that matching criteria, we ended up with 304 patients in each group, both the isolated ACL reconstruction group as well as the ACL MCL group. So equal groups there. The only difference between the two groups is, again, what we talked about with these casting techniques. Patients that had ACL MCL injuries, were the MCL was treated non-operatively, and when it was indicated, they were casted in 30 degrees of flexion. And one thing I think I failed to mention earlier was these are changed weekly. We have these patients come in, we cast them, they go home for 7 or 8 days, they come back, that we take the cast off, we reevaluate them, and if they have a solid endpoint and they're able to weight bear, that's the last time they have the cast on. But if there's still some medial laxity, we'll reapply the cast, have them go another 7 days or so, come back, reevaluate them, and determine if they need another cast for a week. I would say the average time is usually about 2 weeks total for wearing a cast. And then once the cast is off for good, whether that's 1 week, 2 week, 3 week, then we start preoperative rehabilitation on those patients that have the medial side injury, starting with range of motion, trying to normalize that, keeping their swelling to a minimum, having normalized gait, and basically the things that we look for with isolated ACL reconstruction. So we want them to have full extension equal to the other side, minimal flexion loss, minimal swelling, normal walking without the use of crutches or anything. And then once they hit all those goals, again, similar to those that are isolated ACL reconstructions, then they're going to have surgery.
And then once we got that population, Scott, where do we move forward as far as what kind of outcomes we were looking for and how did we evaluate those outcomes statistically?
So for this project, there were really two main outcomes. The first one was postoperative laxity or stability, and we measured that with the KT arthrometer. And on the KT arthrometer, we wanted to look at the manual maximum difference side to side, and that was measured in millimeters. We took that postoperatively around 3 months after surgery. The second main outcome we want to look at was graft tear rate, and that was graft tear rate really at any time point after the patient got back minimum 1 year. And we send yearly surveys to these patients and ask them if they had any re-injuries on top of course, their typical subjective score. So the main two outcomes were looking at postoperative stability via the KT as well as graft tear rates. And from a hypothesis standpoint, because we aim to treat these patients like an isolated ACL reconstruction, like you had said, really whether it's, you know, lateral side, PCL, or in this case, MCL, the goal is to address the collateral stability to try to normalize that. And with the medial side, we're doing that through casting. We want to get that to look like an isolated ACL reconstruction. So the thought is after surgery, from an outcome standpoint, they would look like an isolated ACL reconstruction. And knowing we're going to compare these two groups together, the hypothesis was that there was going to be no difference with their KT difference postoperatively, and there was not going to be a difference in re-tear rates.
Yeah, I think if you ask people around the country and around the world that treat multi-ligament injuries, do they think that would be the case? They would say the opposite. They would say that they would hypothesize that ACL, MCL patients will do worse, that they will have more instability or worse stability outcomes with the measurable, KT2000 arthrometer, and that they would have higher re-injury rates. So I do think we're a little bit in the minority on how we would potentially expect this to come out. But I think we do have the burden of proof of whether or not the data matches up on that. So let's talk about the results that we were able to find and whether those confirmed or disproved our own thoughts on it.
So for the results with the two main outcomes, the first one we looked at was the postoperative stability through the KT arthrometer. And when we looked at those two groups, the isolated ACL reconstruction patients in the terms of their difference side to side on the manual max test were a difference of 1.6 millimeters. And that compared to the ACL-MCL group, which had a difference of 1.8 millimeters. So isolated ACL reconstruction of 1.6 compared to 1.8 for the ACL-MCL was not statistically significantly different. So we concluded that they were statistically the same. So for the first outcome, stability seemed to be nearly identical to the isolated ACL group. For the second outcome, we wanted to look at re-tear rates between groups. And for the isolated ACL reconstruction group, the re-tear rate was 6.6% compared to 7.9% for the ACL-MCL group. So a little bit higher, but you're only talking about really one percentage point there. And from a statistical standpoint, it was not different when we ran those statistical tests. So from an outcome standpoint, we found and concluded that the postoperative stability as well as the graft re-tear rates were similar between both groups.
Yeah, and I think these results really go a long way to confirming our thoughts about this, that this can be effectively treated with immobilization and that it can lead to an outcome very similar to an isolated ACL reconstruction. I don't think we would necessarily make the claim that these are equivalent and that there's no differences, even though there aren't statistically significant differences with our data. I think it's pretty obvious that the ACL-MCL, a multiple ligament tear, is a worse insult to the knee in the short term, and that has potentially long-term implications. But I think the point of the study is really that this can be converted to a situation that is very similar and not statistically significantly different, very close to an isolated ACL reconstruction, as opposed to the flip side being doing either staged two surgeries to reconstruct the MCL, rehab the knee and come back and do the ACL later, or do this as an acute or delayed either one multi-ligament reconstruction that carries with it a lot of times a period of bracing, a period of restricted weight bearing, and bigger problems down the road potentially with stiffness. So let's talk a little bit about the rehabilitation post-surgery. Talk about our protocol post-surgery for ACL-MCLs after we get healing with the cast, we rehab them back to full range of motion, we do the ACL reconstruction. Talk about how we treat these patients post-op.
Well, to be honest with you, there's not a lot of differences between treating a patient post-op ACL reconstruction when they had a medial side injury versus one that had an isolated ACL reconstruction. It's still going to be focusing on maximizing their extension, getting equal to the other side, progressing their flexion through the first couple months before you start hitting strengthening. So from a different standpoint, if I were to say there would be one difference, maybe potentially medial side pain, but even that sometimes is a stretch because we get these patients out 2 or 3 months and I'd have to go back and look at their preoperative notes to determine what their status was from a medial side injury standpoint, because to be honest with you, rehabbing these patients, whether you're looking at the early stage, intermediate stage or later stage, they really do pretty similar from a rehabilitation standpoint when you're comparing them to isolated ACL reconstructions.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you listen to people around the world that talk about doing these things as big multi-ligament reconstructions, there's a lot more post-surgical restriction involved in our opinion that the data backs this up, that if you look at arthrofibrosis rates amongst those patients, pretty sometimes difficult results with regard to range of motion and stiffness that could have potential long-term implications. Our partner, Dr. Shelbourne, shown that several times over, that stiffness in the long term leads to a worse outcome in both the short and long term, and leads to an increased risk of osteoarthritic changes in the future. So, Scott, as we put this into context with what we hear at meetings and other literature sources that we reviewed, how do you think this study fits in with those, and what's the take home messages from this?
Well, for me, the take home is taking a multi-ligament injury and getting, at least in the two outcomes that we're looking at here, getting similar results to that of an isolated ACL reconstruction. And you're doing that by treating the medial side non-operatively. And again, we treat that non-operatively through casting, but really, regardless of that treatment, the goal is to get that collateral stability shored up to the point where it's acting like that isolated ACL reconstruction prior to surgery. And then, like I said, with the rehab, that's really very similar in terms of how they look postoperatively after the ACL reconstruction. So the thought there is that if there are statistically similar results in terms of postoperative stability and re-tear rates, the surgery for whether it be a reconstruction or an MCL repair can be avoided. And I think that has some definite benefits to it because of what you had talked about with these big multi-ligament procedures can typically bring in a high arthrofibrosis rate because of some of the restrictions you have to place on the patient postoperatively, whether that be limited weight bearing or limited extension or flexion range of motion immediately after surgery. And that can lead to some postoperative stiffness, which, as you had mentioned, Dr. Shelbourne has shown time and time again that postoperative stiffness after an ACL reconstruction can lead to worse outcomes. So I think if you have the ability to treat the MCL in a non-operative manner, you're able to avoid surgery and therefore avoid some of those complications that surgery can bring versus treating it non-operatively and getting similar results to that of an isolated ACL reconstruction. So knowing these results of the non-operative management, you being in the surgical world here, what's your experience with treating these? Obviously, you're treating them non-operatively through casting here, but in your training, in your residency, your fellowships, or any point in your career, were you operating on these, whether it be MCL reconstruction or MCL repair, or what other treatment modalities or treatment choices were you using for these patients, and what did you see in terms of progress?
I have not done any MCL reconstructions in 12 years of practice. I have done one MCL repair. And so I do think there's a role for it on a very, very limited basis. I would say that I don't think there's a role for proximal MCL repairs. I think proximal MCL avulsions get so stiff so quickly that I think it's a bad idea to go putting a staple, suture, you know, whatever kind of device you want to put up around the proximal end of the MCL, just working in that area, an injury to that area for whatever reason carries with it a very high risk of stiffness. In the middle third of the MCL, I think those almost uniformly heal with casting. So I would not recommend repair or reconstruction for middle third tears or mid substance ruptures of the MCL. The distal ones are where it's a little bit more difficult in that they can sometimes take a long time to heal. For more distal MCL ruptures, we tend to go a little bit longer on the immobilization, from more like 2 to 4 weeks as opposed to 2 weeks for other more proximal ones. And in particular, the one that I did, I had an MRI scan that came from an outside facility that showed pretty much the entire MCL was proximal to the joint line. So the MCL, which normally inserts 8 to 10 centimeters past the joint line, it's not subtly past the joint line. It's way past the joint line where it inserts. And this kid had such a large valgus stress injury that the entirety of the distal MCL had pulled off and balled up. It was just kind of rolled up like a ball proximal to the joint line. In that case, where it's no longer crossing the joint line, I think it's wishful thinking to think that that's going to heal with good stability, with any kind of stability, with casting. So in that case, where we saw one balled up well proximal to the joint line, no longer crossing the joint, we did make an incision distally, go and find the MCL, pull it back down to its attachment, and I stuck it down with two staples. And that post-surgically, I did not immobilize the kid once he had good leg control, let him out for full range of motion, and he went on to do well with a subsequent ACL reconstruction later. So that's the only exception that I would have to this protocol, is if somebody has a distal MCL rupture that you can't get to heal, or more importantly, ones that pull off so far and are so unstable that the MCL distal attachment has pulled proximal to the joint line.
Now, in that specific example, and I understand that it's a very specific example, but is it worth trying casting for a period of time, or because you know that it's going to take so much longer than your typical time frame for that, would you jump right to surgery?
Yeah, in that case, I went with an acute repair, and I would recommend doing that acutely. As we talked about before, you only really have one shot to get this right. I think if you leave the MCL in that position where the entirety of the MCL is proximal to the joint line, and you leave it there for 3-4 weeks trying to get it to heal with casting, I think it's going to make it more difficult to be able to free that up from the surrounding soft tissues, pull it back down to its attachment site, and get it up back out to length to cross the joint line again and restore stability. So in that case, I would go ahead with an acute repair. And like I said, I've done that in treating dozens of these over the course of 12 years. I've done that once.
Well, that about wraps up this this project. Dr. Benner, I appreciate the discussion about this project, and I think it was a good one, and at least coming at it from a different angle and showing some interesting and compelling results. So just as always, if you guys want to get a hold of us, you can hit us up on our Twitter and Instagram pages at the SKC Podcast. You can visit our YouTube and Facebook SKC Podcast pages, or you can email us at the SKC Podcast at gmail.com, and we will talk to you guys next week.